Hey folks, welcome back. It's the High Performance Human Podcast with me, Simon Ward, your host for this weekly show. This week's podcast is slightly different. I went to Dubai to visit some clients recently, and I thought that it was such an amazing place, it would be great to showcase what they have on offer. To be honest, I've never really thought of Dubai as a venue for a winter training camp, but I will be considering it in future. And if you've never been, I'd suggest you do the same. They've got some amazing facilities, they've got some great practitioners, and they've got a big, hospitable tri club. And we'll be speaking to some of those people a bit later on. Before that, I want to say a huge thank you to my hosts for the week, Gerard and Jules Gallagher. They were par excellence. They picked me up from the airport, they took me to their beautiful home in the middle of the city and looked after me for the whole week, and then they delivered me back to the airport in time to catch my flight home. In the middle of that, Jules in particular had arranged lots of visits for me to visit Tri Dubai and go swimming with them one morning at Roy's Beach, to go and visit some of the practitioners that she and the other local triathletes work with, and to go and ride at some of the fantastic facilities, particularly the Al Qudra cycle track out in the middle of the desert. We also went to Ras Al Khaimah, where they were doing a standard distance race, and it was a great start to their season. Both Gerard and Jules had amazing races. Gerard set a PB, finished in the top 10 of his age group. Jules also set a PB and won her age group, so we all came back very happy. And hopefully, guys, your form will continue, your hard work over the winter will pay dividends, and you'll have great races at the 70.3. So on to this week's guests. I've got six mini interviews for you. The co-chairman of Tri Dubai, Andy Edwards, is up first, followed by a couple of the practitioners who work in Dubai, and then I talk with Nick Watson of Team Angel Wolf. Finally, I'll be speaking to a couple of UK coaches who are based out in Dubai full-time and who are sharing some of their insights into the 70.3 event and the peculiarities of the course. So I hope you enjoy it. If you do, please pop along to iTunes or Podbean and leave me a rating and a review. And let's stop the waffle and crack on with this week's guests. So it's a Tuesday morning. I'm here in Dubai. I'm sat at the Single Fin Surf House with Andy Edwards, who is co-chairman of Tri Dubai. So thanks for inviting me to the swim this morning, Andy.
My pleasure, Simon. Nice to have you.
Now, it was rough this morning out in that sea. Is it normally like that here?
It's not. No, I'd say that it's 90% of the time, 90% plus, it's pancake flat, like a mill pond, and we enjoy a beautiful view of the sun coming up over the palaces and crystal clear water. Today, quite the opposite, unfortunately. Or fortunately, depending on which way you look at it.
Yeah, well, I think it's always good to get a little bit of practice in rough water, because there's always a chance it could be like that on race day, and if all you ever do is swim in calm water, it could be a bit of a shock.
No, that's it. I mean, yeah, the exception to that pancake flat rule is race day. Ironman Dubai for the past 5 years has been, it's been like a washing machine. So, no, good conditions to train for the pending race.
I guess there's a lot of people from the UK come out to Dubai for the race in February. It seems like you've got a great setup here. You've got this beautiful cycle track just down the road, which I'm going to take a look at in a moment. What other sessions do you put on each week that people could join in if they come to Dubai?
So Tri Dubai has it's a not-for-profit club, strictly speaking. We coach on a voluntary basis, so members of the community take different sessions pretty much every day of the week. So some of us take swim sessions. We run those in the open water Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Saturdays. We have a couple of pool swims for beginners and intermediates. They're just run on a pool entry basis. So we have a coach session, but the entry is just to cover the cost of the pool itself. We have bike sessions running on a Wednesday and a Saturday. We have run sessions running through the week. There's pretty much something for everybody at every level, run by people on a voluntary basis through the week. So just keep an eye on the Facebook page, join the Facebook group, and you'll see the posts that are put there on a daily basis by the session leaders.
Now, you were pretty welcoming to me this morning. It's the first time I met you, but Gerard and Jules invited me down, and
there was 20 of your club mates. You've been really good hosts this morning for breakfast. If anybody comes out from the UK and wants to join you, is that what they do? They just turn up, or do they need to do something before then?
No, they just turn up. I mean, ideally they would they go on the Facebook page, they try to buy a Facebook page first. They'll see a waiver, which then we prefer that they sign that before they come down to any of the sessions. Sign the waiver and then just literally just turn up and introduce themselves to the coaches or whoever the lead in the session. And then just join in. We try to cater for pretty much all levels. So each session, there'll be we'll structure it in a way that beginners, intermediate, and advanced triathletes can get the most out of the session. Don't worry, you'll all get a good flogging.
You were apparently you're the biggest tri club in the world, and according to the Ironman rankings, team rankings, you're also top of that. How did you manage to become the biggest tri club in the world in a place that's not really renowned as a triathlon training centre, or it hasn't been in the past?
Good question. I mean, there are no real barriers to entry. We're an all-inclusive club that encourages anybody and everybody to come, irrespective of their level. It's free, which in a place which is renowned for being particularly expensive is a big plus. And I think that probably attracts a lot of people who just want to save a bit of money. But more importantly, it's just a really nice community here. It's a nice place for the sessions, particularly, a nice place for people to come to mix with people outside of work that they enjoy a common interest with. We've got about 6,000 members, but only I'd probably say about 700 or 800 are active. So people actually come to the sessions who race under the Tried by name. Those 600 or 800 are quite active. They race all around the world. And because they're racing all around the world, not just in the regional races, we amass a lot of points. So that probably answers most of the questions.
Having flown out here on Emirates, which is a great airline, it's the first time I've flown. It's a little further than it is to get to Lanzarote. I think that's probably about 4.5 hours from the UK. But you have to go out there with Ryanair.
Yeah.
So I can put up in the next 90 minutes on the plane flying with Emirates on one of those big A380s. Lots of space, some decent videos, and the scene out here, from what I've observed so far, is pretty cool.
It's great. The summer excluded, where it's painfully hot, fortunately. The training can be very consistent, and varied. We've got the sea, which, most of the time we can swim in, unless the red flags go out and the lifeguards prevent us from swimming out there, which is pretty rare. We've got pools of plenty. We've got the Hamdan Swim Complex on the outskirts of town, which has got 250-metre pools, and quite often you'll end up with a lane to yourself. We've got several hundred kilometres of purpose-built cycle track in the desert, which is pretty pancake flat, and no cars allowed. It's fantastic. And if you want to go and hit the hills, you go an hour outside of town. You go to Jebel Hafit, Jebel Jais, or to Hatta, and you can ride 4 or 5 hours out there, very little traffic on pretty open roads, and get some really good hill climbing in. So we've got everything.
So there's lots to be said for it. Decent swimming, nice quiet riding on some good roads, plenty of opportunity to run. The temperature at this time of year is perfect for a winter training, really. Not too hot, not too cold. You can sleep at night. Lots to be said for it. So if you're listening and you fancy a little bit of warm weather training in a slightly different venue to what you've been to before, I could thoroughly recommend coming out to Dubai. Get in touch with the Try Dubai guys and give it a go.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you're coming out for the race, you're more than welcome to join the weekly swims, bikes, runs. Happy to give advice to anybody that's coming out if they want to get some training in. We'll swim the course once it's laid out the week before. So if you're going to be here in advance of the race and want to swim at least a part of the course and go through that, then you're more than welcome to join us. Hope to see you at it.
All right, Andy, thanks very much for this morning.
Cheers, Simon, pleasure.
Okay, next up, I get to meet a couple of the practitioners who are quite heavily involved with the triathletes in Dubai. Firstly, we speak with Taif Delamy, who is a sports therapist based at the Valiant Clinic. And after that, I'm chatting with Orla White, a physiotherapist working at RU Active on the other side of town, and Orla specialises in bike fit and running gait assessment.
This morning, I'm meeting with Taif Delamy. Now, Taif is a sports therapist here in Dubai with the Valiant Clinic. So firstly, Taif, thank you for making the trip over to meet me.
Very happy to be here, Simon. Cheers.
I came with one of
the athletes I work with, Jules Gallagher, the other day to visit you, and you were showing her some of the strength and conditioning exercises in the gym. Is that the main thrust of the work that you do here?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a population base or the athletic clientele we work with, there's a huge scene here for endurance athletes. Many of the facilities here are second to none, and it really attracts them into that sport. Also, given the sort of year-round or at least 9 months worth of good weather. So yeah, certainly a lot of the endurance athletes, I'd work a lot with them, both from a rehab and a strength conditioning point of view for performance.
The facility you've got is fabulous. And we're sat in another one here now, yeah. Are You Active, which is on the other side of town in what's known as Sport City. Seems like for those who are interested in sport and take a great deal of interest in looking after themselves as well. Mm. You're not wanting for facilities here.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we are sport for choice, and we also, you know, have the clinicians to back up the facilities in a lot of the places, which is great. I'm really happy at Valiant. There's a good sports medicine team. So if I have an athlete come in and they're looking to do rehabilitation in our facility, because it's such a multidisciplinary team, we have everything from, you know, MRI machines to sports med doctors to, you know, orthopedic surgeons. So they really, you know, can see everyone and get good feedback accordingly.
Try Dubai, according to them, is one of the biggest triathlon clubs in the world. They've got 7,500 members. Now, I know that not all of those are permanently based here. They come and go. But there is a very active triathlon community here. Mm. Because of that, does that mean that you, as a practitioner, are sympathetic to the demands of triathlon on the human body and therefore recognise some of the injuries and misfortunes that triathletes might meet regularly?
It's certainly, not only is it the popular or the athletic clientele that I see the most of, but it's also my area of interest. I really like working with them because they're really compliant with the exercises. They're really good at, in general, at sticking to their training or rehab protocol, and they benefit hugely from strength and conditioning. So for so many people, they fall into the usual, loopholes in terms of that area. Either they're not, it's not part of their programming, and it's only later when they step up their training or they get injured that they're like, wow, where's this been in my training schedule? And it's only when they have good coaches or they realize through these errors that, okay, this, I really need to focus in on this so I can have a injury-free season with better performance.
I think that's common the world round. One of my biggest pinch points for triathletes is the lack of strength and conditioning. It seems that most people think that they need to swim, bike and run more in order to advance their performance. And as you said, at some point, they've reached their limit of what the body can absorb. And it results in often a chronic injury, doesn't it? Yeah. We were talking earlier about falling off bikes and, breaking a collarbone or... Yeah. Springing an AC joint, but actually most of the injuries you see are chronic, just through those repeated actions with a perhaps not quite perfect technique.
Yeah, well, as you alluded to, like a lot of it is for the novice athlete. The more you do, the better you get, and then all of a sudden they hit a point and they realize, okay, something's missing here, or they have their first injury, and usually it's a chronic one, and that means it's a longer recovery. It's not a calf tear or something that you can sit back for a few weeks and sort out. This you're dealing with tendinopathies, and I've recently just had a triathlete come in with a stress fracture. These sort of things, you're looking at a big chunk of your season that you're going to have to rehab through, and that's when they start changing their training and focusing on having that support system that strength conditioning gives them.
And that's the folly, really, isn't it? Is that you ignore this stuff at your peril, and when you go to see practitioner like yourself, the first thing they do is give you a list of rehabilitation exercises. So if you do them first, we call it prehab. Mm-hmm. You don't need to, unfortunately, wouldn't need to come and see people like you. Exactly. So probably just as well for you that they're not so good at that.
Well, with some of the clubs, like, Try Dubai, that, and they do talks, and they're more aware of the importance of this, and you know, they're discussing their own training program. So actually, for a lot of them, they come in for movement screens, you know, at the start of their season, and we can pick out any asymmetries they need to work on. I think that the common misconception with strength conditioning for triathlon is just that it's too time consuming. You know, they're already probably have a full time job here. They're training on top of that 10 plus hours a week. You know, you want to give them stuff that they can slot easily into their schedule. I think they get it's daunting to think, whoa, I have to take, you know, another 2 hours out of my week to apply this. Frequently, that isn't the case. You know, a couple of stretches, activation exercises, and basic stability, and you're well on your way. What makes it very time efficient is when you see someone that knows what you should be doing. I mean, you can, just like a training program, you could go online, print something off, but the more specific and individualized it is for the person, the better that, you know, they're going to respond to it.
I think the important message to get across as well is that for endurance athletes, the first goal of a strength program is always to create somebody or a body that's resilient and resistant to injury. So we're not talking about doing heavy bench presses or lifting, squatting heavy, learning how to deadlift correctly. Mm-hmm. We're talking about doing exercises that are going to strengthen up the integrity of the calf, of the shoulder complex, of the core, so that those slightly incorrect movement patterns aren't quite as debilitating. And if we can do that, then they become more consistent and they get better.
Yeah.
And once we've got to that point, then we can start doing some of the other exercises that are going to increase power and strength.
Yeah.
But for most people, it's just about keeping them on the straight and narrow so they can turn up to training sessions uninjured. And I think also there's an element of mobility in there as well.
Absolutely.
You know, we get these tightnesses, particularly in the anterior chain, from not just from training, but we're sitting at the moment. Most people spend their day sitting, working in front of them, and you need to look at the posterior chain.
Yeah.
So exercises that target the glutes, the upper back,
all
of that sort of stuff. And as you say, those sorts of things, you can do a couple of minutes of mobility work while you're waiting for the kettle to boil or your coffee to make or the microwave to cook your porridge.
Yeah, just slotting it into your day like that. And you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of what people should be focusing on.
So your clinic, if somebody was coming out here for a couple of weeks to take advantage of the sort of decent weather in the winter, and they're coming out from the UK or somewhere else in Europe, is your clinic the sort of place where somebody could make a drop-in appointment, or
do
they have
absolutely.
To be a registered member?
No, not at all. It's, you know, we frequently see people that are here on holiday or training camps, and they want to come in and avail of our expertise and our facilities, and, you know, we're happy to accommodate them. So it's just, they basically just call up the clinic to make a booking with ourselves, and but it's very easily organized.
For me as a coach working in the UK, I work with a lot of people who travel and they go to various places, Dubai becoming more popular as a destination and as a business hub. So it's always great for me to know people like yourself who understand the triathlon language, understand the triathlon lifestyle and the demands on the body, and can then give somebody some good advice rather than, no disrespect, but a general physio who has all sorts of clients, you know, old ladies, you know, people who've just sprained their ankle, to rugby players.
Yeah.
So probably what I should do is, at the bottom of this podcast, put your details, your personal details.
Yeah, happy to help with any of your contacts. Absolutely.
And that means that they can be confident that if they come to Dubai and they need to see somebody, they're coming to speak to somebody who understands their language.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, perhaps you can give them some tips on the jet lag you've been experiencing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you can overcome the jet lag. That's just one of those things you have to learn to deal with, really.
Yeah.
Stay here for more than 5 days.
Yeah.
But I think
if you've got contacts of yours that are coming out here, it really, Dubai is a great place to come and have your training camp. There's the facilities, like I said, are excellent. You've got the good weather. You've got plenty of hotels to choose from. And hopefully you've got the clinicians here like myself that can help you out should you need it.
Yeah, and the one thing I would say, we went for a swim in the sea the other day. Even in the depths of UK winter, you can get into the sea here without a wetsuit. It's lovely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
lots to say for coming to Dubai.
Yeah.
Okay, Tafe, well, great. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll put your details on the show notes, and hopefully you'll see some of our friends in the future.
Great. Look forward to it. Thanks, Simon.
Today, in my travels around Dubai. I am at Are You Active, and I'm sitting here with Orla White, physiotherapist. Welcome, Orla.
Thank you.
So you specialise in working with cyclists, triathletes and runners. Is that right?
That's correct. It's, well, specialise is a very, very strong word, but it's a very strong passion of mine. So I do like to see quite a lot of cyclists. They're usually more from a preventive injury side, and the same with runners and triathletes as well.
There's a very healthy sporting community out here in Dubai. Is that a lot to do with the weather and the facilities, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, facilities, you've probably experienced quite a few of them as on your travels, and you can't argue with the level of facilities that we have here. We're really, really, really lucky. Weather, yeah, probably for about eight months of the year, it's wonderful. We see a massive sort of a slow spell during the summer, probably because some people just take that time off. It's very, very hot to exercise. Others just get out of the country, basically, so they leave for 2 or 3 months when they can. But yeah, for the most part, the weather is really wonderful, and we're quite lucky.
But one of the things we find in the UK is athletes seeking a little bit of warm weather in the winter months, times when we'd like to get out of the country and go somewhere else. Typically, they'll go to the Canary Islands because that's the easiest to fly to. It's not actually that much further to fly here, and the airlines are a little bit more luxurious getting out here as well. I'm not sure I could spend 6 hours on a Ryanair flight or Jet 2. But when you get here, you've talked about the weather, the facilities. It seems to me that also the level of practitioners that are working out here is pretty high, and people like yourself and TAFE understand and are sympathetic towards the requirements of endurance athletes of the sort we mentioned a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I'd like to think it's pretty high. I mean, we've all obviously been well educated, experienced elsewhere and here. I mean, I've been here for 10 years, so I've been here for just under a half of my, no, more than half of my career. So, I think we're very lucky with the specialist services that we have here and how accessible it is as well. So perhaps it's not as accessible in other places, but because we work in a private health insurance system, it is quite good.
If a runner or a triathlete came out to Dubai and was doing some training and needed to see somebody like yourself, is it easy for them to book into Are You Active?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're online, we're on all of your social media, and we're quite responsive on all of those levels. So pick up a phone, drop an Instagram or a WhatsApp, and it's pretty much done straight away. Yeah.
And we've been here this morning to observe you doing a couple of bike fits. Is that a speciality of yours?
That's something that I've gone into in the last couple of years. Yeah. I mean, when I came out here, I was kind of a little bit lost in terms of what road I wanted to go down. I'm an MSK physio, and I'm quite a passionate cyclist myself. So I kind of thought, how could I make my, you know, what I love to do recreationally into a little bit more of a job as well. So I took some training over in France and Italy, actually, and in Australia, and have gone down that road as well. Yeah.
What I do like about your bike fits is it's not just about putting somebody on a bike and using some dots and some clever technology. You take into account the person, their biomechanics and their injuries, current and past, and then use that to inform how you're going to do the bike fit. Seems to me that's a much more personal, individualized service, and probably better, more sustainable for the athlete in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be, because we can't put the human body into boxes and angles and all of these things. We're all very unique. So it's very, very important to consider the body as well as the bike in the fit. And obviously from a physiotherapy background, us physios were quite biased. We're all about the body. So for me, actually, during training, I really had to get my head around the bike as well, whereas a lot of bike fitters kind of probably go the other way. So it's trying to find a balance, I think, of both elements.
Oh, that's great. Well, listen, Orla, thanks so much for sharing a little bit about what you do. If we have any of our UK listeners coming out here to Dubai, we'll make sure that your details are on the show notes. And if they have need of your services, we'll make sure they know where to find you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. My travels around Dubai continue, and now I am meeting with another expat by the name of Nick Watson. And Nick is sitting here resplendent in his Team Angel Wolf
clothing. So I'm going to let you tell me a little bit about how you ended up here in Dubai, Nick. And please do tell me a little bit more about Team Angel Wolf, because I'm very intrigued.
Well, look, it's actually been 22 years that we've been in Dubai. I've been a bit of a fitness freak and always done the health and fitness, and that led our journey to here in Dubai with my girlfriend, now wife at the time, 22 years ago. So our focus here when we first got here, we actually got here with a backpack, which was always quite interesting. We had about £800 in our pocket. We had a one-way ticket and no job. The money hasn't changed though. And the last 20 years have been, yeah, have been obviously a real journey of being involved with the health and fitness, personal training, sports therapy movement, of which we set up probably one of the first personal training centers here in 2003. And it was the same year that Rio, now 16, came into our lives. And Rio, with all his, I would say with his difficulties, kind of led us to set up Team Angel Wolf. And it all kicked off when he was about 6 months old. We were bathing Rio one day. It was a Friday afternoon. Happy moment, you know, for Dad there, was in the bath with Rio, and all of a sudden Rio went completely floppy, stopped breathing, his eyes rolled back into his head, and he went into his first seizure. Of course, we panicked, jumped in the car, rushed down to the hospital, and after about 7 minutes, he came out of his first episode, and we were like, what had just happened? We, you know, by the time we got to the hospital, he was, you know, he was a bit more conscious. Doctor saw him, said, look, okay, and sent us home. And then the next day, and another one. 2 days later, another one, and then they started. And then we started to realize all of a sudden Rio was having lots of difficulties with basic things, feeding, movement, sensory issues. And that took us on a journey. It took us 4.5 years to find out his condition. Rio has a very rare chromosome disorder. We're all made up of 22 pairs of chromosomes. And on chromosome 1, he has a bit that's deleted, and it's called 1Q44 deletion. It's also got another word at the end, says de novo, so it's non-hereditary. Life has given us our little boy. Probably about 5 years ago, I've been a triathlon freak since about 16. I had a bit of a health scare, and they found a big lump in my colon, which was about to change. So obviously we removed that, woke up in the hospital, and I said to my wife, look, I want to go back to Hawaii. I want to go back to Kona. I want to race. And, you know, we started training, because actually the last time we were in Kona, my wife was pregnant with Rio. And I always remember saying to her, one day I want to come back with my son or daughter, never knowing where the path would lead us. And I started to prep for it. Obviously, we had to qualify. So I had a plan about 5 months later to do Barcelona. So we started to get ready, and unfortunately, life got in the way. Training was a real challenge for us. Just with work, we just opened up the personal training center. And then one day, my wife turned around and said, ever thought about racing with Rio? So we went, wow, okay, if we were training for an Ironman, let's try and find the longest distance here. So we found a 70.3, a local race called Dubai International Triathlon, and that was in 2014. I swim pulling Rio in a kayak, and then I've got a special bike, a kind of cargo bike. He sits on the front, and then we run together. So, yeah, it's been 5 years of racing.
So what you're describing there, for listeners who perhaps can't envisage that, is something similar to what we might be have seen with Rick and Dick Hoyt, or more recently, Kyle and Brent Peace.
100%, exactly the same. So, you know, I swim, I've got a series of cords attached to my kayak. The bike, Rio, sits in front of me. There are the special teams do it slightly different. They ride a traditional bike and they pull the actual running chair. I don't like to do that. I've tried it a couple of times, but there's no interaction with Rio because he's behind me and I'm just on a bike. So I'm cycling, so I miss all that interaction. But when he's with me, he's singing and selling nursery rhymes. Even though he has problems with speech, he's a happy, content boy, but it's fantastic having him in front.
Does Rio come out with you on all your training sessions then?
Yes and no. Obviously, depending on the time of day, if it's, you know, at the moment, it's actually a little bit cold in Dubai, so we'll leave it a little bit later. But yeah, we try and do as much as we can. The running's the most easiest. Obviously, the swimming's very difficult. So most of my swimming's in a pool, dragging a kayak. might be a bit inconvenient for the other swimmers. Yeah, the biking and the running the most we possibly can. So, yeah, we're out there training together.
Must be quite costly because, I mean, you've got the equipment, yeah. which is specialised, so you have to have that made.
Yeah.
The bike and the bike weight, I know from talking to Kyle and Brent, is the biggest concern,
yes.
because as an athlete, you're only going to be able to develop a certain amount of power, and most people only have to pedal their bike that weighs 10 kilos at max. You've got to pedal a bike that probably weighs 30, 40 kilos, yeah. plus another person on
yes,
the front.
Yes, yeah.
Aerodynamics doesn't come into the equation much.
No, and Rio is quite funny. Rio will sit on the front of the bike with his legs open, chilling out. So he's not the most aerodynamic boy, and it would be a bit... it wouldn't be right for me to kind of strap his legs together to keep him a bit more aerodynamic. So yeah, look, we have to contend with that. And like you said, weather conditions will make a change, you know. So when it's windy... you know, it is a tough day out on the bike.
So I was just, what was alluding to there is the yeah. equipment's costly.
Yeah.
But getting to a race venue, if it's not a local one, you've got to get all this stuff transported there. So there are more costs involved. I know from friends who have children with challenging conditions that there's other considerations regarding travel and carers and that sort of thing. Do you have any sponsorship that helps you?
Well, look, and
do
that's,
what you do?
That's exactly what we do and what we need. So we've set Team Angel Wolf is a non-profit organisation here in Dubai. First and foremost, it's to spread awareness about people with disabilities. Also, because of our fitness background, hopefully we're inspiring people to get fit, to get healthy. The only way we can operate here in the UAE is by having corporate sponsorship. So we reach out to companies, companies in turn sponsor us, and then we wear their brands and thank them through all our social media channels. So yeah, it's the only way we can exist, and without their support, we wouldn't be able to race. Fortunately, I think in Dubai is a little bit fortunate. There are so many races here in the season. And we're not really going too far. A race is generally an hour away, an hour and a half away. So, you know, we do race every weekend. We've done over 210 races in the last 5 years, which include 17 half Ironmans, endless running races, swims, even obstacle races. So we do things like Spartan here. So we'll carry Rio with a team of 8 people on a stretcher, and then any of the obstacles, I fling him on my back, strap him to my back, and we climb over stuff. So it's always been about trying to engage with the community. It's not just about us racing. So yeah, look, without corporate support, you know, that is definitely one of our challenges to continue with that. But yeah, it allows us to do what we do.
If anybody that's listening is interested in finding out a bit more about
yes.
you, where would they go to do that?
Well, look, social media. So Team Angel Wolf on Instagram and Facebook. Would really appreciate that. Obviously, anyone reaching out to us and getting involved. We are also looking going forward, because we're based here, is actually at the moment we're looking at forward. How can we expand globally? How could we reach out? How could we set up Team Angel Wolf in the UK, for example? What that model would look like. So that's a big goal for us, because that might change the dynamics just in how we could receive funding. So yeah, lots of goals. And the goal now is not just about us racing, it's getting the community to get involved as well. At the moment I have, you mentioned Dick Hoyt, I have 5 Team Hoyt running chairs. So when we do a race now, it's not about me doing 42K, we'll do the 5K and take the other chairs. Obviously, we've got a whole community here of people with disabilities. We invite the kids and parents and children to come down. We run together. So the goal going forward also is, how do we grow that? You know, how do we get other people involved? Because, you know, I think for us, when we talk about disability, the most important part is including people with disabilities into the community. And by pushing someone in a chair is just fantastic, because all of a sudden, you're going to help them out of their wheelchair into one of our chairs and we go for a run. Now, for me, hands-on is what it's all about. You know, that is where memories come, where people are physically getting involved and obviously doing something together, where we see the importance of that. So yeah, that's some of our goals going forward. So it's fantastic.
It's quite amazing really to think that how Rick and Dick have inspired so many people. And of course, I know people are inspired by what Kyle and Brent are doing, and no doubt down the road that baton will be passed on to you, and there'll be other people. You know,
you.
If you keep expanding what you know, the reach of Team Angel Wolf, there'll
yes.
be people who are inspired to do this by yourselves, and not maybe in triathlon, but maybe just getting out for a run, or even just letting parents of children with disabilities know that this isn't a restriction on them. You've just got to think a little bit more creatively about how you can do stuff together.
Look, and you hit on the nail there. I think what's most important there is just trying to find ways of which we can include everyone. The running chair is just one of our elements. We do something called Beach Blast. So I have five floating wheelchairs. So we've tied up with one of the local hotels. So what we do is we bring, obviously, kids with disabilities, but then I go to a school. And then I ask, invite the kids to come. And all of a sudden, they have to help a child out of a wheelchair, and we go and play on the beach. And for me, that's extremely powerful. And obviously, that's something that we want to expand. It might be difficult in the UK because of the weather. but the idea, again, is trying to get the community involved from an early age. And I think, like you said, it's important to include everyone. And one thing that's always great about what we do is, you know, we sometimes neglect the parents who have a child with disability because they have so much challenges, and we know what that's like. So doing these activities for you know, sometimes for some parents, someone's looking after their child, they can get some time out and they can mingle with, obviously, other parents. We've all got a story to tell. So, you know, it's helping people on so many different levels. And I think in this day and age, I think that's so important.
All right, Nick, thanks for sharing that story. Good luck to you and Rio.
Thank you very
much.
Hopefully
when Rio reaches 18, you'll get the green light to race in Kona, and we'll see you out on the Queen K.
Well, look, definitely, and many races to come. We'll definitely come back to the UK soon.
Thanks, Nick. Okay, hope you enjoyed that little bit from Nick there. And please do follow Team Angel Wolf on their page and see what Nick and Rio are getting up to. It's a fantastic journey. And I'm sure if you've ever watched any of the videos of Rick and Dick Hoyt or Kyle and Brent Pease, or indeed listened to the podcast I did with Kyle and Brent, you can't fail to be inspired by them. And I'm sure that Nick and Rio are going to be continuing to take that baton on and do their bit in the challenged athlete world. So please follow their story with interest. Right. Now, if you are going out to race Dubai this year, you might be interested in the next two guests I've got on. First, Dave Labouchere, who is an expat living out in Dubai. He's an athlete. But this year, he's also going to be getting involved with draft busting at the event. He doesn't want to bust people. He just wants to make sure that the event is fair and everybody sticks to the rules. And after that, we are joined by an old friend of mine, Glyn Painter. Glyn is also based out in Dubai for a lot of the year. He's a level 3 coach with British Triathlon. And Glyn's going to be assisting David with his draft busting. But Glyn is going to be telling you a little bit more about the course and what you might expect out there on race day. So let's crack on with our final two guests.
I'm continuing my journey visiting key people in the triathlon world in Dubai, and now I'm sat inside Optimal Fitness with David Labouchere. So David is a triathlete from the UK. He's been based in Dubai for 10 years. So I'm going to give it over to you, David, to tell us a little bit more about what you do here.
Well, I spent 32 years as an army officer, and the last four of those were here in the region. And when that came to a natural end, I stayed and I bought into a gym, a coffee shop, and a therapy center. And so now I can indulge my sport and really enjoy triathlon and hopefully give a little bit back to the sport in this region as well.
We had an impromptu meeting in Kona. We were at the coffee boat that's moored out in the bay there. I swam out. You were already sat on one of those little rafts they put out with your friend, and I was looking for a bit of space to enjoy my coffee. And there you were.
I think I'd probably been there for about half an hour at that point already, because sitting on the coffee boat as the sun comes up in Kona has to be one of the class moments in anybody's life.
How many times have you raced there as an athlete?
Five times, and obviously I hope to go back once or twice more.
Yeah, and ambitions for your age group?
This age group, I think, has got beyond me, because these young 54-year-olds will enter our age group this year. And it's the same age group as yours, Simon, so we're up against it.
I'm aware of that.
And
yeah,
we
yeah.
need to go sub-9:30 in Kona in order to win that age group. So I'm going to hold out for 60 and see what happens in 2023.
I'm thinking about having a transgender reassignment and going for the female 80 to 85 category.
We're just going to hang on a little bit longer and stay healthy.
Tell me a little bit more about the triathlon scene here in Dubai. I mean, I've seen a little bit of it. You've got some fantastic facilities. You've got this place here. I've been to visit a couple of physio clinics. I've ridden around a couple of the purpose-built cycle tracks. It seems to be a mecca in the middle of the desert here.
We are really, really lucky. For 8 months of the year, the sea is the perfect swimming environment with non-wetsuit conditions, a little bit of roughness from time to time, but nothing like a proper ocean. So it's never really unswimmable. We've got these cycle tracks, as you've pointed out, 200 kilometers of pristine 4 meter wide asphalt without a lump in the world, and no traffic lights, no traffic, no roundabouts. They build us underpasses and bridges. And of course, running wise, we have these gated communities that are beautifully set up for lots of long runs, and you don't have to mix with traffic. So we've got the perfect facilities. And we've also got a really good group of friends who formed Try Dubai, and it's a non-payment, it's not supported by any businesses or anything else. It's just a group of people, and it's grown and grown. And at the moment, we are third place in Division One. I think we've been first place before, but we're third place in this Ironman Try club system. And that's because everybody helps each other. Now, you've been out swimming with Andy Edwards, and he gives all that time for free. He's currently chairman of the club with one other joint chairman. And we all try to give back to the club and work with each other, either out on the bikes or running or in the sea. And we've got some great pools here too. If you go to Hamdan, which is a swim center just up the road, we've got 50 meter, 5,000 seater stadium, and you get your own lane every time you go there. This is just, it's not a mecca because it's quite hard to get here and it's very hot in the summer. So you've got 4 months where we train at night, but the rest of the time it's perfect. And that's why a lot of pros come out here to train here too.
Yeah, I was considering this coming over because I've spent quite a bit of time each winter in Lanzarote over the last few years. And it's a 4.5 hour flight there from the UK. The Canary Islands is probably the place in Europe that's guaranteed warm weather year round, you know, where you can ride in shorts and a t-shirt. But you fly there with Ryanair. I'd happily put an extra 90 minutes on my flight to have an Emirates trip over to Dubai.
It's pretty cushy with Emirates. And of course, everybody else flies here too, because we're on the way to everywhere. Mm. And living here means that we can race Southern Hemisphere races as well. My favorite is South Africa. I've been every year for the last 10 years to Ironman South Africa, for instance. This year, the World Championships of Half are in Taupo, New Zealand. Of course, everybody from here can go. But if people from Bembecula are going to really struggle to get to Taupo. You know, it's a long, long, long way halfway around the world. But here, yeah, we're perfectly placed. We can train through the winter. We can do early season races. And then we can hopefully go to Kona 6 months later and enjoy that too.
The people from Bembecula will probably find the conditions are more similar in New Zealand though than from Dubai, but a small point.
Yeah, it's a small point, but it's a bloody long way. So we have got this lovely community of very friendly, very inclusive community. Mm. And it's, I think, the Facebook page, which is about the only sort of measure of membership that we have because nobody pays anything. The Facebook page is now about 6,000 strong. Now, of those, probably 3,000 are real triathletes who actually swim, bike, and run regularly. And probably 1,500 compete every year at the host of races that are put on here. We have probably a choice of two or three all the way through the winter, every weekend that we could go and race.
Tell me a little bit about Optimal Fitness.
Well, it's a business that I bought into 5 years ago. It's a gym, which is largely personal training. And we got some great classes too. So we look after a broad spectrum of athletic ability. We're really good at helping people get more healthy. So we have a therapy center with some of the best clinicians in the region. And that therapy center includes a guy called Russell Hill, who's a top osteopath, can fix almost anything. 3 or 4 really good physios, a sports therapist, a dietitian, a podiatrist. We've got a good broad spectrum of holistic. We're pretty allergic to toxic pills and big pharma, and we're even more allergic to any suggestion of surgery, because I think when you penetrate the body and do something, you tend to create problems further on down the line. And we've got a great cafe, which is where I obviously spend a lot of time with my friends drinking coffee.
Coffee and triathlon.
We started with a coffee boat, and we've just spent 20 minutes in my cafe, and coffee here is equally good.
So if I was a triathlete coming out to Dubai, I'm coming out for the 70.3, or I'm coming out here to spend a bit of time in some warm weather, is Optimal Fitness a place where I can drop in to have a workout? Or?
You're absolutely welcome. We don't have a fixed membership system, so you can pay a small walk-in fee to use Optimal Fitness, and you'll find other triathletes here almost every day. No, every day we have triathletes training here because, you know, it's a like-minded community, and we've got good bikes. We've got the facilities to do everything you need to do.
Well, and I'm pretty certain that if somebody was from out of town, wanted to know a little bit more about the layout of stuff here and how things work, they could pop in here, buy you a coffee, and you'd be happy to share that knowledge
with them. Absolutely. And we're on their way to the track, no matter where they come from. We're 8 kilometers from the start of the best start of the track. You can cycle on Dubai roads, but unfortunately, the traffic here doesn't understand cycling at all. Bikes are at risk. Mm. And we lost, when I came here, we didn't have the cycle track. It wasn't built yet. Sheikh Mohammed hadn't fixed it for us. He has now, but at that time we were losing one cyclist a year because the traffic doesn't understand bikes. So we encourage you, if you come out here, to use the bespoke facilities that are designed for the job, because then you don't have to worry and you really can ride and stay to your power and stick to your plan and do 200 kilometers in a training session and feel really good afterwards.
So there's one more thing I wanted to chat with you, David, about. The upcoming Dubai 70.3, you are getting involved with draft busting, or draft policing, shall we call it. Tell us a little bit more about what your ambitions are for that, because I know it's something that triathletes regularly talk about with races, that there's too many people on the course, there's too much drafting. Everybody gets cheesed off with it, but nobody admits to doing it.
Absolutely. Everybody says that other people were cheating. And what I've seen, and I've done 40 branded Ironman races now, and what I've seen is cheating in every race. And it's cheating mostly because the rules are not always enforced. So what I'd like to do this year is either prove or disprove that we have or we haven't got too many people on the track. Because every time people blame the environment, they say the roads were too narrow and they put 3,000 people on the track and it was bound to be drafting. Now, I believe that if people make a conscious choice not to cheat, then we can have safe and fair racing, even with 3,000 people on a single loop like we have here, 90Ks. So what we plan to do, and we're still talking to Ironman about what this means, but what we plan to do is put a really strong set of referees out there looking after a section of the race at all times. So there's always going to be policing and we will enforce the rules. And I also believe, because we've made this public, that actually we'll bust a lot fewer people this year because everybody knows that we will be enforcing the rules. Mm. So people won't cheat. Now, what I hope will happen is that we bust nobody, that everybody sticks to the rules, we get a fair race, and we turn around at the end of the day and say, it is possible. It is possible to race with 3,000 people on a 90-kilometer track and race fairly. I don't know if that'll happen, but we'll try to facilitate it.
And you're going to use a bit of technology, aren't you? So that really people aren't trying to disprove it against you. You're going to use cameras. And
well,
so
I believe that cameras is only a stepping stone to the real technology, which must be RFID, and using the technology that exists within GPS to say that if two people pass the same point over, let's say, a kilometer within the same time, then they're obviously working together and they're tight. And that sort of stuff will come out soon. But for now, yes, we will be wearing cameras. Every marshal, every referee will be wearing a camera. And if you decide that you need to appeal a decision that we made to give you a card, then you'll be appealing against video evidence, not just somebody's word.
Ah, great. I mean, it's nice to hear that somebody's taken an initiative, and I'd be really interested to see how it works, and if it does, whether Ironman will adopt that going forward in a greater way.
We have a vested interest. We don't like being told that the Ironman Dubai race is draft-friendly, because it's not. It shouldn't be. It should be fair. Otherwise, we send the wrong people to world championships, and that is not good for the sport.
So as part of my trip to Dubai, I met up with an old friend, a British triathlon level 3 coach. He's based out in Dubai part of the year, and he's agreed to come and chat to me about the upcoming Dubai 70.3 event and the peculiarities of that course, as people who are going to be racing there are going to find. So, well, firstly, welcome to the show, Glyn Painter.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I've just about got over my jet lag from the trip now.
It's a terrible 4-hour flight, right?
it makes it easier on the Emirates flight. They're very luxurious, even in economy. But yeah, we chatted before, and I realised perhaps that one thing I'd omitted to do was spend a little bit of time specifically talking about the course for the upcoming race. So I wondered if we could go through that now, bit by bit, starting with the swim. Now, I swam at Roy's Beach when I was there, and it was very rough. There was at least a 1 meter swell and some quite big chop, which I like that sort of thing, but I should imagine that a large proportion of people might be a little freaked out to see waves like that.
Yeah, and it's very hit and miss. It all depends where the wind's coming from. So if the wind comes from the sea, we're going to have some chop. If it's coming from the desert, it's invariably quite flat. However, the end of January, beginning of February, which is the time of year Dubai 70.3 is, the weather can be very changeable from day to day. It's coming out of their winter and progressing towards the spring, summer, that you can call it. So there's no guarantees on race day what it'll be. Inherently, there's a bit of swell.
It's been quite rough. From what I understand, talking to the Try Dubai club guys, each time they've had a race there, it's been reasonably choppy.
Yeah, absolutely. But in previous years, last 2 years I've been here over the period of the race, and the week before it's been pound flat, and then race day it's rubbish, and 2 days later it's pound flat again.
Yeah, as ever it is. So do you start on Roy's Beach then?
No, so in previous years you haven't. So you've started in various places. Last year and the year before, they started in the Jumeirah Hotel Beach, which is probably about 500 or 600 metres up the beach.
So is that the big? That's the sail, is it? Everybody knows the Seven Star.
Yeah.
So
between the sail and Burj Al Arab.
So when you stand on Roy's Beach, that's to your left. Is that right?
Absolutely. If you're looking out to sea, it's to your left. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Is that where the course goes this year then?
They've not released it because of all. There's loads of construction at the moment either side of Roy's Beach. However, I know that transition is going to be in the normal place, which is into, as you look at the sea, the right-hand edge of Roy's Beach, because they've started to construct it already. So the swim is definitely going to come in that way. Where they start the swim down the beach, they're yet to release or unsure. I imagine it's either going to be just to the right or just to the left of the Burj.
So if it's a point-to-point, i.e. you're not going in at the same place you come out, it's just going to be one lap, isn't it? There's not going to be any running in between.
Yep. And it's inherently, so they've done it from the harbour, they've done it from the Jumeirah Hotel Beach, and it's basically swim out, turn right, go along, turn right, come back in.
Okay.
So the good thing about that is if there's some swell, when you get out into the sea, the swell does, it's not so violent, it's a little bit more rolling. So once you've got out into the main water, it won't be so bad. The current tends to go from left to right, so when you turn right, you can have a bit of current with you, and then it just gets choppier as you get in towards the beach, as it does.
So my recollection is that the beach isn't particularly steep, so you're going to have to walk in quite a way, so would be worth probably, if the waves are quite big, to dive underneath them rather than trying to swim through them, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. And the same with exiting. The thing to do is, if the waves are coming in, is get one hand out in front of you, get one arm going like a windmill, and kick and go in with a wave, and it'll take you a long way.
Yeah, you need to watch some of those Australian surf life-saving competitions where you can see them waiting for the wave and then they end up with a 200-yard run into the beach. So it is a particular skill, that one. So maybe practice it the day before. And of course, as coaches, we'd always recommend that people go and have a swim down there the day before. If you don't want to do the whole course, at least practice the first part of the swim and maybe cut a corner and then practice the exit as well, so you can get...
So you probably won't get in, if the swim start is where it has been in the previous years, it's unlikely you'll be able to get in at swim start unless you're booked into that hotel. But you can certainly go in where the exit is, swim straight out, about turn. Because the issue is, when you're coming into the beach, the sun is right in your face. However, as you turn and do your recce swim, you're quite easy to see there's some prominent things on the beach, one of which is the mosque, just to the right of Roy's Beach, which is prominent. And then just to the left of that is a mast, a telephone mast that's shaped like a palm tree. It's also a good sighting point. But the sun is right behind it, just that level. So some good tinted goggles is a must.
Yeah, we had a few clouds when I was there, but you don't get many clouds in the Middle East, do you?
Oh, when you do, it's about to rain.
Yeah. Okay, so perhaps some tinted goggles as well might be in order there. just so you're not going to blind yourself when you're looking up for your exit points. Okay, so you come out up the beach. I guess you've got a sort of 1,500-yard run up the sand, and then you're onto tarmac. You're in transition.
So the transition is all on the beach, but they carpet it fully. They board it and carpet it fully.
You head out of town. I would presume that, the roads are pretty busy down there. Have you got closed roads going out of town?
Four closed roads. So one side of the highway is fully closed. In previous years, it's been one lane. Last year, it opened up to two lanes. But it's a very simple bike course, easy to navigate. Beach road, you go out of beach road, turn left, and then you're just on the main drag all the way up to the top of Al Qudra, where the bike store is at the start of the bike loop, for those who know, and then hang a right, U-turn, come back again.
Right, so you're not doing a circle on the Al Qudra circuit then?
No, you don't go on the Al Qudra circuit at all. You go on the main roads that are adjacent to it.
Now, again, my recollection from cycling out from that bike store you talked about is it's slightly uphill and into a headwind for that first part, yeah?
Yeah, so invariably you're going to have, if there's wind, it'll be a headwind out and a tailwind back.
But the roads are super smooth, aren't they? So
yeah. A few roundabouts to navigate, but you navigate them at full tilt.
What about choice of wheels? Because, again, when I was there, it was quite windy, and at certain points on the course, it felt exposed. If you're not confident on a bike, you're going to get some crosswinds, which might unnerve you if you've got a disc wheel on the back or a deep rim front wheel.
So without being cliched, it depends. It depends on you as a rider. It depends on what you're used to riding, your weight, your ability. But certainly, if you know how to use a disc with the roads being as wide as they are, you can use a disc, a deep section wheel to your advantage if you know how to use them correctly. If you're not used to using a deep front section wheel, maybe don't purchase one, especially for this, just in case it is a bit tough on the wind.
About mechanical support on the race, do they have people out there, or is it like most other races where you're self-sufficient?
I'd go self-sufficient, because by the time someone gets to you, you know your race could be over. And worst case scenario is that even if you're one of these people, if you puncture, it's over. It's a long way back from the other end. You know, it's 45k. At least you can fix it and get back in. I would never rely on mechanical support in any race.
All right, so there's closed roads. Now, you're going to be a draft buster. I've also got on this podcast coming a bit later, David Labouchere. David is trying to instigate a much stricter drafting or no drafting policy this year with the introduction of more motorbikes, and you're one of those draft busters, I gather.
Yeah, and it's not... It's just enforcing the rules. And what people have got, they've got blasé with what drafting is and what it isn't, and people pay lip service to it because I know anyone's been busted, they haven't been busted. And so there's a lot of people out there, including myself, who've seen it go on blatantly, you know, and people draft by accident, and I get that, and then they pull themselves out of it. So it's not a case of ride up, see someone drafting, bust them. You'll be warned, and the motorbike and the draft buster will stay with the same 100 people. So you'll go past 100 people, and then you'll pull in. That 100 people will then pass you, and then you go back past them again. So you'll get a feel of who's riding within the rules and who's trying to exploit them.
You're going to be wearing cameras as well, though, aren't you? So it's not going to be really any argument.
No, and, you know, they can put their $500 up and question it, and then you show the footage, and they get their $500 back, and they get their time back, or they lose $500 and won't get their time back. It's, you know, we're not out there to ruin anyone's day. We're just trying to make it fair for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, been interested to see how that one goes. So you come back into town. It's a nice fast course. It's, as I say, it's slightly uphill, but it's you can be on your aero bars most of that way. It's not a, it's just a drag, isn't it? It's just a slightly noticeable drag rather than a real big pitch.
Yeah, it's false flat, and it won't take much speed out of you. I'd be very surprised if anyone's in there in a ring at all for the whole race.
Mm. Okay, back into town. Is the transition two at the same place as transition one?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay, so what happens then? You just run along the beach road?
Yeah, so you come in, you dismount your bike, go through transition, and then there's a green track that's on the boardwalk, and there's a big wooden section for people to walk on, a purpose-built run track that goes the whole length of the beach. And it goes about 7.5 k's to the top of the beach, which is the first turnaround, and then you come back to the transition turnaround again, and then you go out 3.5 Ks and then come back into the finish. So the track is slightly sprung. So that will take, it, although it's easier on your feet and your knees and your hips and great to train on, it will take a bit of pace away. So what you find a lot of the pros doing is that they run down the concrete on the sides or on the wood, but it's still open fully to traffic and children and prams and people who don't understand what a running track is and what a walking track is.
Okay. What about shade on that run? Is there any?
There's not a lot. You get a little bit of shade when you do a little S-bend through some buildings. This comes off the beach slightly. But 11 o'clock in the day, that time of year, it could, the temperature could, you know, exceed 30 degrees. It certainly did last year. But on the same vein, it could be, you know, low 20s if it's slightly cloudy and we've had a couple of nasty days of weather.
Yeah, having said that, if you're coming from the UK where it's currently a nice mild winter's day and it's 8 degrees, it's still going to be a little warm. So my thing's always wear a white hat. You can always put a bit of ice underneath it or some pour some cold water over you. Make sure you've got your sunscreen. And I would say that one thing you might want to do is do some sauna protocols before you go out, just to help with a little bit of heat adaptation.
Yeah, absolutely. And like anything, you want to be out here at least 4 days before race day just to get time acclimatization. So, you know, a bit of heat adaptation, you know, unless you've got loads of time off work, you know, get out here 10 days before and you should be fine.
If anybody is coming out that early, I guess the roads that they're racing on are not going to be closed, and you don't really want to be cycling on those roads, do you? Because the motorists locally don't seem to understand bicycles.
Yeah, so it's illegal to ride on the roads that have got a speed limit over 80 k's anyway.
Right.
So you can cycle on some of the roads, but anything over 80 k you're not allowed to cycle on. And to be honest, anything, it's all dual carriage way here, and the off ramps are all pretty quick, you know. And we have had, you know, in years gone by, people who, you know, before the track was up and running fully, people used to ride out on the road all the time, and we've had a couple of fatal accidents. So I'd suggest don't risk it. Even on beach road, when you go into the transitions from your hotels and booking in and registering and stuff, you know, just be super cautious.
If you've got a car, there's a couple of places, a couple of closed circuits where you can ride. You mentioned one, Alcudia, which is how I wasn't entirely clear about the total distance of that loop there.
So there's a number of loops, but if you keep turning left around all the loops, it's about 117 k's. If you just do the loop from Zads all the way around to 49 k's, the stick is about 17 k's, and then there's a couple of extra loops, a 10 k loop and a 23 k loop.
So that's the stick. It basically goes from that cycle store that you talked about, which if people want to go there, they can drive there. There's plenty of parking. There's showers there afterwards. They'll find lots of other cyclists that aren't doing the race. You ride up the track, 17 k up to the start of the Alcudia circuit, which is marked. There's a cafe up there as well, isn't there, at Zads that you're on about. You can do little loops there, or you could just ride up the stick, have a coffee and come back down again, and you're going to have got 35K in.
Yeah, so imagine the stick being a lollipop stick. You then got a loop with then two ears on the top, which are the extra loops at the top.
Okay, all right. And then there's that DXV place as well, isn't there, in town?
Yeah, so you've got it's called Area 1, District 1 or something. I can't think of the other name of it. It's by various names, which is about a 9 or 10K loop. And once again, there's a superstore there, bike store and caf and stuff. So you can park up and ride around there. But Kudra is probably the best one, because if you go up Kudra, up the stick, that's where the bike route goes up on the road next to it. So you've got an idea of where you are. And then when you turn right at the top of the stick, as you go past Zads and get back next to the main road towards the mosque, there's a mosque down there about 10 k's down the road. Yeah. That's where the turnaround is for the bike. So you'd have an idea of where you are, etc.
Great. And that's it, Glyn, I think. Nice little insight. Thank you very much.
That's been helpful.
If we've got any other people listening on the podcast who are coming out and have got questions, can we share your email address? And
yeah, it's glyn@konacoach.co.uk.
Sorry, say that again.
glyn@konacoach.co.uk.
All right, perfect. And then you can be our man on the ground. So you're there as a race referee, but as I said, you're really trying to enforce the rules, not bust anybody unnecessarily. But, you know, I know you as a diligent, sort of helpful coach. So I'm sure if anybody wanted a bit of advice, you'd be able and point them in the right direction. And there's plenty of decent bike shops around, isn't there?
Yeah, lots. Yeah, so you've got Wolfie's, you've got the Trek shop at the top of the stick. There's Cycle Hub, there's Revolutions, and they're all easy to find. You ask anyone at a hotel, and taxis are cheap as chips, so you can jump in a taxi with your broken bike. They're putting the boot or the back seat or something. And failing that, just get onto the Try to Buy a website, and there'll be loads of, there's 3,500 members. So if you're really stuck, someone's always going to be quite local to where you are, and they will help you out.
Well,
it's a great community, aren't you?
We've spoken to a couple of the Try Dubai guys elsewhere on this podcast, and I'll put a link to that Facebook page and some of them as well. So thanks, Glyn. Appreciate your insight into the course. I'll hook up with you next time I'm in Dubai.
Thank you.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high-performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.